Welcome to the Faith Element podcast for the March 26, 2017 session, focusing on Ephesians chapter 5, verses 8 through 14, exposing darkness. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Aaron Hall.
I'm David Adams.
We welcome Aaron and David back with us. They were with us for the last podcast, so if you listen to that one, you've heard a bit of their wisdom already. Aaron, of course, is here in Macon, Georgia, where I live, and the important thing to remember with Aaron is that she is the co-host of a podcast called Glass Half Full with our very own Nikki Hardiman.
Woo-woo!
And, and you can listen to them on iTunes or, of course, at their website, which is whatfillsyourcup.com, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Whatfillsyourcup.com. But do listen to it. It's a great podcast. It really is. You'll laugh. You'll cry. It's really a good one. And then David Adams is back with us as well. He's been with us on several podcasts. He teaches regularly at the Baptist Seminary of Kentucky, or BSK as we call it, and is the chief curriculum guru for Faith Element, which means he does all the hard work around here. So David, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Well, Bert could not be with us tonight, and much like last episode, where Daniel provided the intro for us without actually being here, Bert has done the same thing. So we appreciate, Bert, your extra energy for this, and we'll eagerly listen to your words of wisdom.
Sure, David. A little background information on our text from Ephesians. Think back to your school days, any age, any level. Chances are, whether you've been in graduate school, high school, or as far back as elementary school, you have been asked to compare and contrast ideas, compare and contrast events, persons, some other things. Comparing and contrasting is a simple tool to help us organize our thoughts, identify distinctions, strengthen our understanding, and evaluate, pass judgments, make informed decisions. For this fourth Sunday in Lent, our text from the letter of Ephesians uses the tool of comparing and contrasting to offer instructions on how to live. The comparing and contrasting here has to do with darkness and light, night and day, black and white. Light and darkness have been used throughout religious history to help us comprehend what is good and what is bad. What is to be strived for? What is to be avoided? Now, I want to insert a few cautionary words, though. The imagery of light and dark is just that. It's imagery. It's, again, just a tool. Occasionally, we have been guilty of letting this useful tool of understanding become too literal. We have to remember that darkness and night are also good things. A time to rest, a time to sleep, a time to dream. There are a whole lot of God's wonderful creatures who thrive in the darkness of nighttime. Likewise, light can be very dangerous. Light can be overwhelming, even blinding, quite disruptive and even painful. And let's not forget that in our history, the overemphasis of black equals bad and white equals good fed our fears and justified our prejudices. So, again, we have to remember it's just a tool. It is a helpful analogy, and it is a helpful tool that the writer of Ephesians uses to emphasize what he wants to say. And one of those things that he wants to say is that what we do in the dark will be exposed in the light. What we do secretly will be brought out for everyone to see. What we tried to hide that's bad about ourselves, we brought out for everybody to know about. Who doesn't have some fears that people might discover things that we would prefer kept hidden, things that we've said, things that we've done, or just even our thoughts? I really like how Nikki dealt with this in her Bible background video. I encourage you to go back and watch that if you haven't. What if things get so bad simply because we keep them hidden in secret? What if things get so bad simply because we keep them locked in the cold, dark basement of our souls? As Nikki points out, when things are exposed to the light and become known, They are a part of the light now. And I love this particular insight of hers. The gift of grace in this text is that even our poor choices and bad behaviors can be redeemed by the light of Christ. Now, our lectionary text sits in a slightly larger context, which includes a discussion of sexual immorality and behaviors that are selfish and harmful, abusive and destructive. These are the ways of darkness, according to Ephesians, and as children of light, we are not to behave in an abusive or exploitative manner. Biblical scholar Bill Loader, writing about this text, reminds us that walking in the light is challenging stuff. To walk in the light is not to be naive. It's not about being happy, he says. It is about owning a commitment to justice and embracing a stance of compassion for everyone. The light, he says, the light is so connected to Christ that it cannot help but be about compassion and care and concern for all human beings. Now, with all that said, this discussion of ethical behavior which exposes and wards off bad things, maybe to wrap it up, it's best said by the great wizard Gandalf, "I have found that it is the small everyday deeds of ordinary folk that keep the darkness at bay. Small acts of kindness and love." So, that's my way of just trying to shine a light onto our text this week. Thanks.
Okay, early on in our marriage, my husband had to realize that he tried to say that I am scared of the dark. I am not scared of the dark. I don't prefer the dark. And so I flip on all lights at all time. And my solution to solving any problem, like if you hear a bump in the night or, you know, whatever, is you flip on all the lights in the whole house. Like not just in the room that you're in. You just go flip them all on. And my dear, sweet, wonderful husband finds this to be insanity. He thinks that I'm crazy. Because my solution to like bump in the night, like crazy, you hear a sound and it's definitely a murder at the door, is that you don't just get a flashlight or like peek out the window. You turn on every light in the entire house.
I think that's totally reasonable.
It is. And it's because I don't prefer the dark. I'm not afraid of the dark because that would be childish.
Do you have a light on when y'all are sleeping?
No, but that took like 5 years in before I had all the lights out. I'm just confessing here among That's friends.
All. Aaron is team light.
I'm team light, yes. Because it makes sense to me that, you know, you want to see everything. Whereas, you know, some people, my husband included, would like a deep, dark cave. And that is insanity. So,
because if you turn on the lights, then you can see where the sound came from.
Yes. That's right. It makes total sense to me. You can see everything.
It will expose whatever the scary thing is.
When you're reading in Ephesians, one of the things that's interesting here, this is what a lot of people would refer to as a digest of Paul's work that was collected in a really good form that can be used to make important points to the church at that day and what they needed. And what's really interesting is verse 10. A lot of things are interesting, but 10 is interesting to me because verse 10 has one of those nice little snippets that you occasionally hear from Paul, where it says, try to find out what is pleasing to the Lord. You know, Paul's the same person who says, like, with fear and trembling, work out your own salvation. You know, he's one of those people who, yes, he established a lot of the theology of the early church, but there are several times where he will bubble up and say something to the effect that this is something you have to work out for yourself and something you have to find for yourself. Make the effort. You know, and this passage looks a lot like a passage that says, make some effort. Sure, you were in darkness once, but now you're not. So make the effort to live the way you're supposed to live now that you're not in the darkness. You know, do the things that people in the light do, not the things that the people in the darkness do. And yes, you had some examples early on, and there's some things that come after this passage that talk about what it means to live in the light. But the big thing here is, hey, make the effort. The last verse is, sleeper, awake, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. You know, he's telling people to do something. He's not so much laying out a principle as just making a call to action here. And that's a pretty powerful thing.
Yeah, it does sound like he's saying, figure it out. Like, it's very active. Like, people should get up and do things and figure it out and work it out.
Yeah, and if you read the passages before to put this in context, it's not like he's giving you a grocery list of things to go out and shop for. You know, look for these people, for they are evil. You know, he's not really doing that so much as, and he's not talking about specific actions, really. He's more talking about an attitude that, for lack of a better word, you take advantage of other people or use them in some way. Even down to the words we translate as sexual immorality in the earlier passage had an earlier Greek translation that generally meant selling yourself to take advantage over another person, you know, where you use sex as a weapon to get what you want. You know, he really is pointing at this idea of abusing people or taking advantage of them or trying to have power over them, as opposed to living in lightness where you don't feel a need to do that to somebody else. But that still comes back to that verse 10, try to find out what is pleasing to the Lord. So not only is he not giving you a list, he's encouraging everybody to go out and look, you know, open your eyes up, find out what's good and bad, and then expose the things that are bad. For a lot of Christians, we get caught up on the, let's not be associated with anything bad. So we don't go out and look. I'm not going to a bar because I might see some sinners in there, you know, things like that.
Or we think we already have it figured out.
Sure. There's that old joke, you know, that how you can tell they're Baptists because they don't talk to each other as they're passing in the doorway of the bar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we don't want to be seen as associating with anything that could be construed as wrong. We will say, oh, we'll withhold ourselves from the world because, after all, we're above that world. And therefore, we don't participate in those things, even though we wish we did. And we probably do when people can't see us do that. And here we're being told, why don't you go try some things out and find out what's pleasing to the Lord and choose not to do the bad things when you come upon them? That's a far cry from just sitting around being holy and withdrawing yourself.
How do we find out what's pleasing to the Lord?
That's what I was thinking about. There's a little bit of mystery there.
There is, but it's in terms of fruit, if you'll notice. There's not a checklist saying, okay, you did this, therefore, that's a sin. We know it's on the list, so, okay, you've done something bad. Fruit, and the way fruit's talked about here, is basically going to be a result of an action. You know, what comes of it? What was the intent of it? What comes of it? What spirit does it create in the people who participate in it? You know, if you're doing something that is abusive in some way, or that takes advantage of another person, or hurts another person so you can feel better about yourself, well, that's some bad fruit. And that's the kind of thing, if you're looking and paying attention, you know that that's bad fruit. And it's not something to turn a blind eye to. It's something to shine a light on and say, hey, we're not doing those kinds of things. We know that's wrong. There are other things we haven't looked at. Maybe we should. Maybe we should ask questions about things every now and then. Like, should we be doing this? You know, we make a lot about asking the question, what would Jesus do? When deep down, we're terrified of what would Jesus do, because we know the answer, that's not going to be what we want to hear. But still, maybe we should be asking that question.
I do think it is a good question to ask. You know, how do we know? How do we find out? But how do we find out with each other, right?
Right.
With the friends and those we care about, we tend to learn, right? What's pleasing to those that we care about, we want to be around, to others, and what's not pleasing. Usually we get pretty clear signals on those things. Is it the same? Can we make an analogy there? I don't know.
Probably. Maybe another thing we should be doing is, instead of, it was interesting. Now I'll sound old like Bert, but one of the albums I know Bert knows about by a group called Petra has backward masking on it. And if you spin it backwards, it'll say, what are you looking for the devil for when you ought to be looking for the Lord?
Really?
Yeah, it's fascinating. But maybe this passage goes there. You know, we're trying to look for something that's negative all the time, to find things that we can condemn, find the sin that we wouldn't do so we can condemn it. We don't spend a lot of time talking about find the good that we can do so we can hold it up into the light and other people will see it.
That's a great point.
That's really powerful to me. I think that definitely we live in a world where people want to boycott places because they don't agree with what they're doing. And people want to call out what everybody else is doing that's wrong and find a way to distance themselves from that, whether we're talking about people in the church or people in politics. It doesn't really matter. We love to point out what other people are doing that is wrong. And when we do that, we feel like we're doing something. But I think what I hear you saying, David, is that really instead of calling other people out or distancing ourselves from those things, we should just find a way to do something that is helpful and good, or in the words of the scripture, good and right and true.
Right. Good fruits. I think of, it's an analogy, I guess, but when I have a nephew who's kind of weird, but when he was a little kid, at one point he sat at my feet and opened my wife's purse up and started pulling things out, and he'd hold up and say, "What's this?" And I'd tell him what it was. And he'd hold the next thing. "What's this?" "Oh, that's lipstick." "What's this?" "That's a wallet." "What's this?" "Those are tissues." He kept till he emptied the whole purse. He went through and doing that. But maybe that's what we should be doing in a spiritual sense. Hold up everything and say, "What's this?" You know, and we ask, "What's this?" We might be asking, "What does this lead to?" Or, "What does this make us if we adopt this attitude? What kind of person does this?" You know, and then again, we're trying to find out what is pleasing to the Lord, as opposed to coming in with some sort of predetermined idea of what's going to be acceptable and not. Maybe we should be trying to find out.
That is literally the way I find things. Like, I will dump out the entire bag or purse often. Seriously, you have to dump everything out. I mean, I could kind of pick my way through for a long time, but the risk there is it makes a gigantic mess.
Yes, it does.
But I think what you're talking about with finding and looking for things, I think a lot of times I, and maybe some other people do, we worry about making mistakes. Like, if you're searching and finding for things, I worry that I'm going to get it wrong. Do you think people worry about that?
I know absolutely they do. We want an ordered, safe universe where we won't make mistakes. You know, and you think about it as a minister. How many ministers do you know? And you would know this. How many ministers do you know who can be in their church and are allowed to make mistakes on a regular basis?
Are allowed to confess that they know they're making mistakes.
How many of them will keep their job if they do?
Right, you know, exactly.
Church members especially are bad at having that kind of expectation. It's unrealistic that, you can't take a chance. You can't make a mistake because that's messy and it makes us uncomfortable and we can't allow you to do that. And we are so sold on this image that faith has to be measurable and repeatable and something that can be proved in some way, that we do not spend a lot of time trying to hold up the possibilities that could be there. You know, we only listen to God up to a certain point, and after that, we're uncomfortable, so we don't want to hear God anymore. You know, let's flick out the light. We don't want to see that piece.
But what a great image of dumping all our stuff out, right, and looking at it during Lent, right? Sure. I mean, isn't that a lot of what Lent is a journey that helps us do?
Absolutely.
That you know, we dump all this stuff out and start looking at it and holding it up. It's a time of reflection, of looking at our lives and our behaviors and our motives. What's inside, and you know, hopefully giving more attention to that, the good stuff, the light stuff.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of that brings up the practice of confession too. Like, if all of my stuff is just dumped out, I might need to be honest about what I'm seeing.
Yeah. And how often do you confess to having done something good? You know, we're taught not to do that. It was interesting that Nikki had mentioned something earlier about things that we don't like and the way we respond to them. Immediately, my mind went to something kind of off, which was, there is a nationally well-known fast food chain that is also well-known for discriminating against certain classes of people. And I don't eat at their restaurants. I'll drive past them. I'll sometimes say bad things about them. But by and large, I don't eat at those restaurants. But everybody I know who's been there, they don't talk about the issues that drive me away. They talk about how kind the people who are there happen to be, how nice they are, how polite they are, how much they seem to really care about what they do. You know, they held things up and saw something good in the light that I refused to shine because I did not want to be seen as participating in what they do. That's probably more on me than it is on them, even though I think that everybody, well, not everybody, but a lot of people would agree that I might have good reason to feel that way because when I held that up to the light, that's what I saw. But this point is, we should continue to hold things up to the light and not just assume we know what it looks like and we know what it is.
Which, you know, we are so tempted to think it's easy to tell the difference, right?
Sure.
And because, like, we are surrounded by stories that are very much you know, the dark and the light fighting against each other. Bert ended his introductory comments with a quote from Gandalf from the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And there it's very clear who is on the dark side and who is on the light, right? I mean, even some of the wizards in that tale, you know, they are colored, you know, their outfits are dark if they're bad and they are light if they're good, right? Think about Star Wars, right? It's the same thing there. You know, the light side, the dark side of the force, the light side of the force. And it's so stark. And I think the danger is that we get lulled into this sense that it's that easy in real life, because it's not, right? I mean, things aren't starkly shaded for us. And sometimes they're mixed up. Sometimes it's a mixture of good and bad, and we have to figure out, you know, how to sort through it.
For every Gandalf, there's a Faramir out there that we have to wonder about. And it can be like that. We live in a dualistic worldview. We still live there. I mean, our computers work that way even. You know, you're on or you're off. You're right or you're left-handed. That's just the way human beings think. But still, I come back to looking at this passage, and the fruits of the Spirit they're talking about here are not things. They're attitudes. They're intangible things. But they're intangible essences of something. So you can't just hold it up and say good or bad, and you can't say light or dark, because you're talking about the results of something, not the thing itself.
I think that's where we're in trouble, because we want to sort and find those things in people and categorize them. And when that doesn't fit that way, sometimes it's very difficult.
I am interested by this other part about taking no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but exposing them instead. Because when you look at that, most people's mindset, especially in this day and age, is going to be, oh, there's this thing that is causing a darkness in my world right now. And I interpret that as darkness. And so I'm going to see this and I'm going to say, oh, I need to expose this. I am right and good because I don't like this thing and want to expose it as being a dark thing in my world right now. That's probably not what this means. You know, we're exposing something, yes, but we're not taking part in the unfruitful works of darkness. We may be doing more of a, let's not do things that lead to this result. You know, let's not talk about going down that road, not pointing at somebody saying you're already down that road.
Well, and the light naturally exposes darkness, right? I mean,
yes.
If I remember correctly, one of the principles of nonviolence that Martin Luther King Jr. Taught was that by being peaceful in their marches, that it exposed the violence.
Yes.
That was inflicted upon them. They literally were doing nothing but peacefully marching, but the violence and the aggression was exposed. And I wonder if that's closer to what this is talking about. I don't know. What do you think?
Quite possibly, yes. I mean, those are pretty unfruitful works. And again, when you shine the light, when you make people aware, you can't really hide it if something truly is bad. That's the whole nature of being something. He says unfruitful. I always think in terms of negative fruit, but those kinds of things can't be hidden. And interesting with a flashlight, when you pull that out to see something in a dark room, you do not see black things in that room when you shine a flashlight on them.
Mm-hmm.
You still see them. They're just black as opposed to white. You just see a larger part of the picture. And so you're talking about lightness and darkness here. I don't think you're talking about the object so much as looking at that bigger picture and seeing what is light and dark in there.
And again, and seeing both.
Yeah. And you have to do that because that's how you're going to find out what's pleasing to the Lord. You turn the lights on and look at all of it, the black stuff and the white stuff that's lying around the room.
I don't know if you guys have seen the story about the two little boys who, they're not much older than Nikki and I both have sons around this age. And one little boy is black and one little boy is white. And the little boy who's white wanted to get a haircut, and the two of them had this little scheme, and the story kind of went viral. And the little boy who was white wanted to get a haircut exactly like his friend, get his head shaved. And they said, we'll trick the teacher, and the teacher won't be able to tell us apart anymore because they would have the same haircut. And the story, everybody has shared this, the story, and oh, how cute this is. And wouldn't it be a great world if we didn't see color, just like these little boys don't. And I think the story is absolutely precious and I love it. But some people have raised the question, you know, what this story brings up is not just a lighthearted precious story of boys who just have a great friendship, and that's wonderful. And maybe they don't see the differences because they thought, you know, the teacher wouldn't be able to tell the difference just because they had the same haircut. But the truths that that brings out for those of us who can see the whole picture, the grown-ups in the room, are that there's a lot of differences. And I think what I hear in the scripture about not ignoring the things that expose the truth is that we need to look at the whole picture of that story. Why is that such a compelling story that, you know, there are differences between the experiences of those two little boys?
It's interesting, too, what you see in that story largely dependent on what you brought to that story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same picture regardless of who looks at it, but it's interpreted by the experience of the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've often, you know, David, you talked a little bit about Martin Luther King's theory of nonviolence, and I've often thought that that's what happens at the cross. And you know, we've all heard it said that in the cross we've seen both the very best of humanity and the very worst of humanity, and they all kind of meet at the cross. And I think that when because of the way that Jesus lived, he exposed darkness all around him, and that really came to full fruition at the cross, because we saw how dark humanity could be and behave and act. We also saw how light and good humanity could be, and what we can be capable of. And all of that was exposed by the light that Christ shined in the world. And I think that the call for us in that is that when we live with the aim of producing fruit of the light, not only are we putting that good fruit into the world, we're also kind of making known the things that aren't a part of that. We don't have to fix them. We don't have to change them necessarily, unless that's the work that you're called to. But I think that when we live in a way that exposes that, when those dark parts of ourselves and our communities and our world are exposed, not left to fester in the darkness, they begin to heal themselves. Exposing them to the light, making them known in the world, I think is probably the first and maybe the biggest step to stopping them. I think too often terrible things continue to happen because they are unknown to the rest of the world. But when they become known, they begin to shift and change, and it's harder to keep those things going.
Well, thank you all for this conversation. We'll close with the words that this passage closes with. Sleeper, awake, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.